Good afternoon. You are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 7th of January, the year 2015. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll get a preview of this week's Wildlife Wednesday presentation, Seeing What We Can See, with guests Mary Wilson and Kathy Hawker. Donnie Burris will offer an update on activities at the Zagorin Youth Center. Jeffrey Clow and Matt Lillard will highlight activities at Eagle Crest. That read is Almanac, Bird Note, Music and More, today on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight: cloudy skies with a chance of snow and rain and light freezing drizzle. Low temperatures 22 to 30 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, mostly cloudy skies, and it's forecast for Friday too, with a slight chance of rain predicted for Friday.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. South Dakota tribes argued against the Keystone Project during a hearing Tuesday with public utilities commissioners. Opponents say because TransCanada's project has changed, it has to go back to the permitting process. A lawyer for the company disagrees. Victoria Wicks has more.
The Yankton, Rosebud, Cheyenne River, and Standing Rock Sioux tribes contend that there have been a number of changes in conditions surrounding the pipeline since it was permitted in 2010. And so the tribes say the recertification process allowed by South Dakota law does not apply. Attorney Thomasina Realbird represents the Yankton Sioux.
There is simply no process for an applicant to go back and amend one or 30 findings of fact. Those findings of fact are inextricably linked to the permit that was granted in 2010.
Tribes say there's no need for the full evidentiary hearing scheduled for May because TransCanada has admitted to 30 changes in its application for recertification. TransCanada's lawyer, William Taylor, says that argument is illogical.
If the legislature intended that variations in the design or the construction or the operation or the markets that occurred in 4 years' time would void the permit, then the legislature would have said that. The legislature would have said a permit is good for 4 years.
Taylor says there are changes to the design, engineering, route, and economics, but those changes don't affect the integrity or purpose of the project. In denying the tribe's motions, commissioners held that TransCanada is entitled to due process and that the dispute illustrates the need for a hearing, which has been set for May 5th through 8th, in Pierre, South Dakota. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Today in our series on climate change and Alaska Native people, KNBA's Jocelyn Estes reports on health.
David Driscoll is director of the University of Alaska Anchorage Institute for Circumpolar Health Studies. He says a recent survey in three regions in Alaska shows unintentional injuries are on the rise due to thinner ice on waterways people travel by snow machine. Warmer, drier weather means more dust and bigger wildfires and more people with respiratory disease such as asthma. Driscoll says unusual weather, such as rainfall in the middle of an Arctic winter that turned to ice, or unseasonably severe storms or cold also created hazards.
There were also events of cold-related injuries, so frostbite and other sorts of issues, and unfortunately there were some mortalities.
Mike Brubaker is director of the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium Center for Climate Change and Health. He says the anxiety and fear triggered by poor conditions can also be damaging.
Mental health is huge, very important, and especially when people live in places where they're facing new kinds of threats, like coastal storms. Their home isn't as safe a location as it used to be. And people live for, you know, entire seasons with that kind of stress going on.
But Brubaker says people are also finding ways to stay healthy by adapting to the environmental effects of climate change. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
Navajo and Oneida Arizona state lawmaker Lloyd House passed away last week. The Arizona Republic reports House was the state's first Native American lawmaker who served in the Senate in the 1960s. His work included organizing the first Social Security offices for the Navajo and Hopi tribes. Funeral services are planned for Saturday. House was 83 years old. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Are you an experienced journalist who can lead radio producers and reporters in best practices and bring Native voices to a wide audience? Kawanak Broadcast Corporation seeks an executive producer, program manager. Full description at NativeAmericaCalling.com. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
6 minutes after the hour, you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here.
Hey, kids, let's go for a walk.
Oh, press the wrong button there. 6 minutes after the hour, you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau.
Very muffled.
Our first guests today are Patricia Wary, Mary Wilson, and Kathy Hawker from the Alaska Wildlife Alliance here to talk about Wildlife Wednesday presentation, which is happening tonight. Thank you for coming down the station today.
Thanks, sure.
Welcome.
So first of all, Patricia Wary, can you tell us about the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, please?
Well, we are the sponsors for Wildlife Wednesday, and our group is a chapter, the Southeast chapter for Alaska Wildlife Alliance, and this is our effort to do educational sharing and the like for the people in our community or the greater area down here. And we do Wildlife Wednesdays in the wintertime, first Wednesday of every month, about October through April. And we've standardized it, and we're out at Thunder Mountain High School at 7 o'clock. We have these folks this evening, and I hope people will come, even though it looks kind of icky outside, because the people who do brave the weather are going to have a good time.
And the title of the show is Our Little Exploration, Seeing What We Can See. You want to talk about more of that, Kathy?
Sure. Yeah, on the title, Mary Wilson and I are doing the talk tonight, and Mary and I for a long time have been doing expeditions together. We started out doing what maybe you might call big explorations, which was a 10-year study of American dippers in the streams around here, and that after we finished that, we started doing little explorations, which are individual explorations out just to kind of find what we can find, see what we can see, with no real goal in mind, and just use our abilities as curious naturalists and observers to discover.
What kind of things do you find?
Wow.
Tracks, bones, signs of browsing and grazing.
Unusual plant diseases.
Yes.
Landforms, stories in the soil.
Strange trees sometimes, very strange shapes on trees.
How do you open your eyes to what's happening in nature?
That takes a willingness to do so in the first place. You have to want to see what's out there. And a lot of people don't, and that's okay. But when we go out, we say, let's just see what we can see. And some of my friends have taken to doing this with us, too, and we all have a good time. Because you just go, you listen, you smell, you look, and whatever you find, maybe there's a story. And if you can put the story together right on the spot, that's really cool. But sometimes you can't. You have to follow up a little later with a little research, talk to an expert, read a book, look on the web, something. But you can make the story as big as you want in many cases by learning more.
What are some of the recent stories you've learned?
Well, let's see. What would be the best one, Kathy?
Gosh.
Here's the book.
Oh, let's see. Well, we had some interesting tracking a couple of weeks ago out at the Eagle Beach Scout Camp area. Just going off the trail very slightly, we encountered some tracks that you might not expect to find close to trails around Juneau. We found some tracks that were pretty sure were wolf tracks and some that were possibly coyote tracks. So that was a kind of a fun discovery, and actually maybe even more so. We found some very interesting diggings in the ground that had some interesting stories inside, and you'll have to come to the talk to find out more about that.
Yeah. Figuring out what they were eating and why they were eating what they were eating
and who
what they left behind.
So a little exploration is everything except what isn't a big, big exploration.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Whatever we feel like, basically.
Yeah.
What are some references that you might turn somebody on to?
People. We end up following up with people a lot.
With a lot of local. Juno is laden with local experts about various things, and what they don't know, they'll know somebody who does.
Mm-hmm. So agencies like the Forest Service.
And NOAA.
And Fish and Game, and often have people
right.
you can contact, and they are often really delighted to have some quirky naturalist call up with an obscure question.
By and large, they've been exceedingly gracious and generous with their information.
Now, I know both of you have worked on several books. What are some books out there that would be good references for people to learn
to
from?
Get started with this?
Yes.
Whoa, now that's a hard one.
Mm. I tend to like reference books that don't just give you the name of something,
yes.
but give you some more background on it. So, for example, it's a little older now. I don't know if there's a new edition, but Pojar and McKinnon have a book on plants of the Pacific Northwest mm. coast. And it has the basic identification information on a lot of common plants, but it also has a section of further information that includes ethnobotanical uses and unusual stories about the origin of the names.
Mm.
And so I appreciate references like that. So I'd say, you know, Podrick and McKinnon.
That's a good one.
To have.
That's a good one. There's nothing really comparable for animals in such a single volume.
Discovery Southeast has some
mm-hmm.
good publications.
Okay.
Richard Carstensen just recently has one out on landforms of Southeast Alaska and the connection between landforms and natural history. That's a lovely, very thorough, interesting background document.
Okay.
And his trails document, too, local watersheds.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now you brought a box with you.
Yeah.
A box of fun.
My box. Yes, I brought a little box here. We thought it would be interesting to have some examples of the sorts of things that sometimes we might encounter on one of our little explorations. Sometimes those things are little. So I've got maybe I'll describe it without telling what it is, and the radio listeners can try to think about what it might be. It's a little disc, a white, pale white disc. It's fairly light. It has concentric circles on it, and then the edges are kind of fluted and open. It's made of bone, so maybe someone trying to picture what I'm describing maybe not very adequately might imagine this. Oh, sorry, Mary, go ahead.
So our question would be, okay, whose bone is it? Why is this bone here and not some other bone? That would be the sort of thing we would do.
I've also brought a skull that is of a local mammal, and many people would look at the skull initially and see the very large incisors, the front teeth, and immediately think either a porcupine or a beaver. And it is actually one of the two, but there's also a clue about it that tells us that it's a beaver rather than a porcupine.
Right. Remember that beavers do a lot of cutting of wood, and they've got some monstrous muscles that run down on either side of the muzzle that help them close their jaws with great force. And that's how they're able to chop down trees. Porcupine can't do that.
And you're just giving away the answer.
Yep.
And I've got a mystery object we found on the beach one time. I can make a sound with it. You can hear it's dry and a little sort of crackly sounding. It's black and wrinkled and feels almost like plastic. We found that on a beach.
Looks like something you'd get from the used record in CD sale.
It does. It's the color of an old vinyl record, actually. And it even has some kind of slight striations or grooves in it. And this one, I don't know, maybe I should...
But it has horns, at least on one end.
Yeah, it's got some protuberances on either end. It's a natural object, and I won't tell what it is, so people can figure it out, but it does have to do, I will give a clue, it has to do with the reproduction of a sea creature.
I'm not going to try to guess. Is there anything to come up with the wrong answer?
You can come to the talk tonight. I'll bring it.
What else do you have in that little box?
Oh, I think the only other thing I brought is a seed pod from a local flower here. These are iris seed pods. And sometimes, you know, when we find something unusual, the goal isn't necessarily to figure out what it is. Sometimes mm-hmm. that's part of it. But that's not where we stop, because there's so many other things you can discover and learn about it. So
we can ask questions. When you see a seed pod like this, how are the seeds dispersed? In this case, it's probably just by shaking the capsule. In other cases, like fireweed, you know it's dispersed by the wind because you see all the fluff attached to the seeds. But in other words, it's not just what is it, it's what does it do.
Sometimes it's maybe not what you'd expect, because I remember one little exploration we had one time where it was a very hot day. We were on North Island on a little kayak expedition, and we were in a bit of a meadow area, and there were a lot of lupin plants around. It was in the summer. The lupin had gone to seed, and we started hearing pop noises, pop, pop, and we realized it was the lupin pods. They were drying in the heat, and that caused them to explode. Making the seeds fly out. So right. We actually got to witness.
It's called ballistic dispersal.
Yeah.
That kind of brings me around to a question. Your tools, in this case, were your ears.
Yes, exactly.
What tools should people walk with besides being dressed for the weather?
All of them.
Dressed for the weather is good.
Yeah. All of them.
Ears, eyes, nose, sense of taste.
Sense of taste, sense of smell.
Touch.
What about a magnifying glass?
Mm-hmm. Oh, often very useful.
Mm-hmm. And binoculars come in handy.
Yeah.
A plastic bag to bring out garbage, which we
forget also.
To bring out the plastic bag.
It wouldn't hurt
in
this kind of weather to have cleats on your feet.
Mm-hmm.
And a camera.
Yeah, which I sometimes forget and wish I had taken it.
So I've been talking to Jeshwari, Mary Wilson, and Kathy Hawker about the Wildlife Wednesday presentation, which is happening tonight at 7 o'clock?
Yes.
At Thunder Mountain High School?
Yes.
Right.
We meet up in the library, which is on the second floor. It's easy to get to, either on the stairs or on an elevator.
Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
We want you to come, and don't be afraid of those roads, because it's going to be worth the trip.
All right. Well, thank you for coming by today.
Thanks, sir.
Sure.
Hey, kids, let's go for a walk.
Yeah! There's a place that I know where I like to go. The rivers all run so crystal clear. And the trees are growing tall, and the critters have it all, and wild birds are all that you hear. Come walk with me,
come walk with me,
through the big pine trees,
through the big pine trees,
from the mountain tops,
from the mountain tops,
to the shining sea,
to the shining sea,
where the critters roam,
where the critters roam,
free and on their own,
free and on their own.
In the wilderness,
in the wilderness,
we'll be right at home,
we'll be right at home.
It's where the grizzly roams his high mountain home. He's looking for his pine nuts and his berries. Oh, he likes to have his fun. He likes laying in the sun. But to some folks, he's still a bit too scary. Come walk with me,
come walk with me,
through the big pine trees,
through the big pine trees,
from the mountain tops,
from the mountain tops,
to the shining sea,
to the shining sea,
where the critters roam,
where the critters roam,
free and on their own,
free and on their own.
In the wilderness,
in the wilderness,
we'll be right at home,
we'll be right at home.
It's where life is free to live and breathe and be. Everything just has a special place. Big and small, they get by. Some eat, some sleep, some die. Some even have a smile on their face. Come walk with me,
come walk with me,
through the big pine trees,
through the big pine trees,
from the mountain tops,
from the mountain tops,
to the shining sea,
where the critters roam,
free and on their own,
in the wilderness.
We'll be right at home.
It's where the bullock walks,
and the wolf still runs and stalks.
She sings a song up to the morning sky.
And the sheep and mountain goat
share the rocky, craggy slopes
with the pika,
who's still a bit too shy.
Come walk with me.
Through the big pine tree,
from the mountain top
to the shining sea,
where the critters roam,
free and on their own,
in the wilderness,
we'll be right at home.
Come walk with me
through the big pine tree,
from the mountain tops.
To the shining sea,
where the critters roam,
free and on their own,
in the wilderness,
we'll be right at home.
Come walk with me through the big pine tree.
Welcome, Jim Stoltz. It's 21 minutes past the hour. You're tuned to KRNN, KTOO News in Juneau. Our next guest is Donnie Burris from the Zach Gordon Youth Center. She's here to give us an update about the center itself and tell us a little bit about it. Thanks for coming by, Donnie.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So first of all, tell me about the Youth Center.
So Zach Gordon Youth Center is a drop-in facility for youth of Juneau. We are located at 396 Whittier Avenue downtown in the same parking lot as Bullwinkle's and across the street from K200. We serve youth from ages 0 to 19. And what I mean by drop-in is kids can come in after school hours, and we have pool tables and ping pong. We have an indoor basketball court. We have a racquetball. We have an outdoor covered basketball area. We have a little kiddie area outside as well. And we also have a fire pit out back. Not much use today, but in the summer we fire up the fire pit. We have a little garden outdoors. It's really a great place for Juno's youth to come and hang out and have fun. We also have activities usually on a daily basis. We do a lot of partnerships within the community. For instance, we just this past month had a partnership with the Tlingit program where we did some carving with kids and beading, and they got to learn a lot about the Tlingit culture. We also hold a lot of activities as far as we also have a climbing wall. I don't want to leave out the climbing wall. Indoor climbing wall with harnesses, and we always just have staff available to hang out with kids after school hours.
It's a great facility.
Yeah, I love it. It's definitely a treasure in Juneau that is used every day by kids. On an average, we see about 25 to 30 kids a day. We cook and we have snacks. We always have cookies or healthy snacks available for kids after school. So it's really a home away from home. Kids love coming. We see some of the same kids every day. We see new faces really often. It's just really a great place in a community for kids to come and have fun and enjoy some of these activities that I wanted to talk to Juneau, amazing Juneau people, about today.
How is the center funded?
So the city is funded partially by CBJ, and we're also nonprofit. We have the Teen Club Board. So the employees all in the management are all CBJ. And the way that works is the board owns the building, and CBJ owns the land and runs the management. So it's a great partnership that we've had since the passing of Zach Gordon himself, and it works really well because we're able to be funded, and then we're able to still we're able to do these great activities for the kids through the city and through the wonderful participation of course, the residents of Juneau. So it's a very good thing to have in the community.
I was lucky enough when I first came to Juneau to spend some time there at the Teen Center, back when it was called the Teen Center.
Yeah.
Meeting Zach Gordon and what an awesome individual he was.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but great things ever about Zach Gordon. It's one of the great things about working there. It's not just having a job, but it's definitely, over the years of working there, hearing all of the great stories about Zach Gordon and what he did for the community and how he treated youth and teenagers and his love for them, it's really like a motivation to go to work every day, because it's like, it's meaningful. It's not just going to work to get a paycheck. It's being with the kids and being a good influence on the kids and just being a part of their lives, which is something Zach Gordon did. And I remember hearing stories about him making hamburgers and fudge for the kids and always making sure that the jukebox was playing and having dances and things. And those things are just really nice to have in the community. And I'm so glad that I'm a part of Zach Gordon Youth Center today. It's just like his legacy lives on, and that's a great thing for the community.
What kind of activities do you have coming up in the near future?
So today I wanted to talk about some of the activities we have. So first of all, we have this thing. We have a couple things we do on a weekly basis. One of those is called Fun Fridays. And every Friday of the month, except on those city holidays, we do activities that's geared toward for kids after school. And a couple of activities that are coming up that I don't want any of you guys to miss out. On January the 9th, which is a Friday, of course, we have Do You Want to Build a Snowman? It's an art and game fusion. Also, on the 16th, which is also a Friday, we're going to do a Martin Luther King activity where we're going to build dream catchers. Just a fun way to tie in the holiday with activities. And then on the 23rd, we're going to have rainbow snow. So outside, we're going to go out, if there's still snow out. And the plan is to color the snow with food coloring and make creations outside. And then, of course, the last Friday of the month, we're going to actually come inside and we're going to make our own snow from scratch. We thought that might be a great activity for kids to do hands-on, and we really like to keep it fun and light at the center, so there's always something new. Also, some of the things that are starting up soon is the climbing club. We had a, it's going to be the spring session, and what the climbing club is, we're really excited to have Jesse Palomino on as our climbing instructor. And he runs our climbing club for youth, and he takes them on field trips to the rock dump. They also learn skills on how to do proper climbing, belaying, and they meet on Tuesdays and Thursdays every week, and that starts on January the 27th from 4:30 to 6. And they really specialize in climbing skills and cool moves they get to learn how to do. And then at the end, they do a spring competition, which is really fun. The kids love it. They did the past one at the rock jump, and the kids had such a great time. At Zach Gordon, we like to do activities in the building, but we also like to take the kids on field trips. For instance, in February, we'll be taking some kids to Eagle Crest, and they learn how to do basic skiing, and they do the lessons. But it's just about exposing kids to different things that maybe they don't have the company to go and do. So we take our kids and we go. And when we go to Eagle Crest, I'm not a skier, so I can't tell you the full price, but I do know that our kids go for a discounted price. I think it's around the area of $10 to $15 that we ask for the kids to bring. And then we haul them in our van and we go up to Eagle Crest. So we do a lot of outside activities as well. Another one of our activities that I want to talk about is our workout club that we do with the youth. And we do the workout club 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And we also have a weight room in our facility. And we just take the kids and we do basic exercising, treadmill. And we do the elliptical and we do stretching. And it's nothing too intense, but it's just good. sometimes in the winter it's hard to get out, and so we just go in the wake room and just have fun. And we focus on different muscle groups every time we meet. And it's really a great time to just relax and just exercise, which is something the kids enjoy. And that's for kids ages 14 and 19, so the little older group. We try to have something for everyone. Also, something that we have is the after-school art classes, and that's every Wednesday. So every Wednesday we do art, we do painting, survival bracelets, carving, bead making. We do wacky things. For instance, today, if anyone's interested, Clarina, which is one of our staff meetings, she is making puff paint. And I don't know where she gets the recipe from, but it's flour and baking soda and different colors, and you put it on the paper, you lay it out on paper, and then it expands. And so just wacky, cool stuff that kids would like to do. We try to keep it fun and interesting at the center. And so that's a part of our every Wednesday after school art program. Also coming up, I wanted to mention we have an open mic night, and we do that once a year for the teenagers, and that's ages 14 to 19, and we just like to have a night dedicated for them from 7 to 10, it's on a Friday, to come in and share with us maybe some of their hidden talents. We've had singing and poetry, dance, all types of talents that teens may have. And it's just a relaxed night for kids to come in and hang out and show some talents. And it's a really, really nice place for teens, a safe place to go and hang out and have fun, kind of let your guard down. All the staff are really exciting. And so it's a fun place to be. I've heard from lots of kids that they like to come. So open mic night, and that's on January 30th. What else do we have? Also, we have movie nights. And that's every Thursday night, also geared for teenagers, ages 14 to 19. And movie nights are every Thursday, and on that night, we rent the latest blockbuster hit. And we cut off all the lights, we turn on the surround sound, we pop fresh popcorn, we most of the time have a dinner and movie, and we just sit back and watch movies and laugh and enjoy the time together. It's really nice, and I'd like to make a point that most of the things we do at the Youth Center, it's free of charge. So when you drop into our facility, there isn't a charge. So all of these great activities, such as the art and the climbing club and the movie nights, they're all free for the youth. So I think that's another reason why Zach Garden is so important in the community, because we're not asking the kids to pay to do these things. They just get to come in. So it's not a factor, which is another reason why it's so special. Other things that we have coming up also include the nail art, and that's going to be January the 12th. And we do our nail art. We have our very own nail stylist, Clarina, who is also a part of our staff, and she does fun designs on kids' hands. For Halloween, she did pumpkins. For November, she did turkeys, and now she's planning on doing snowflakes or really whatever the kids want. That's just another thing that we try to do to keep things available for kids to do that they might not otherwise get to do. And that's what we have coming up for January, and I wanted to come in and just let everyone know about all of these cool things that's happening at the Youth Center. And my hope is to come back once a month and just update the community on different things that we're offering, because I just think it's a shame to have anyone miss out on these great activities that are free and available right here in our very own town.
All right. Thank you for doing the good job that you've been doing.
Thank you.
Donnie Burris, is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I just want to thank the community for being supportive of Zach Gordon Youth Center. And, one last thing. If you ever need to get in touch with us, you can give us a call at 586-2635. And our hours are 11 a.m. Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., with the exception of Saturday, we're open 3 to 10. And they can give us a call if they have any questions about any of these activities, if they want to donate, if they want to stop by to just check us out. And we also have a click to give. So if that's something they want to do, they can look us up there. If they have any other questions, they can come down to the Youth Center, and we will welcome them with open arms.
Donnie Morris, you sound very excited about what you do.
I am very excited. It's probably the best job in the world, hands down.
All right. Phone number one more time, please.
That phone number is 586-2635.
Donnie, thank you so much for coming down here.
Thank you for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 7th of January, 2015. Today is Christmas in the Russian Orthodox Church, which goes by the Julian calendar rather than the Gregorian calendar that we use. Today is the birthday of Jan Wenner, 1946, New York City, grew up in California, dropped out of Berkeley to get a job at a magazine called Ramparts. And the next year, 1967, in a printer's loft in San Francisco, he co-founded a magazine with the jazz critic Ralph Gleason, a biweekly focused on rock music, and called it Rolling Stone. It's the birthday of the novelist Nicholson Baker, born New York City, 1957. Wanted to be a musician. He was a bassoonist, was pretty good, went to the Eastman School of Music, planned to become a composer, and then one day he changed his mind when he saw his mother laughing hard at an essay on golf by the writer John Updike. Baker wrote, "My mother's laughter was miraculous, sourced in the nowhere of print, unaided by ham mannerisms. Nothing is more impressive than the sight of a complex person suddenly ripping out a laugh over some words in a serious book or periodical." And he decided, Nicholson Baker, that he would be a writer. He wrote a book about his obsession with John Updike called You and I, A True Story. Wrote a novel about a single erotic phone conversation between two strangers called Vox. His most recent book, Traveling Sprinkler, about a poet who begins to reinvent his life as a musician. It's the birthday of Zora Neale Hurston, born Notasulga, Alabama, 1891. Went to Barnard College, studied anthropology. She was the only black student there. Published many short stories in the 20s, early 30s. Her first book, Mules and Men, was an anthropological study of African-American folklore. Best known for her novel, 1937, Their Eyes Were Watching God. And it was on this day, 1610, Galileo described his discovery of three of Jupiter's moons, which was important evidence in support of the Copernican theory that the Earth went around the sun. Here's a poem for today by Joseph Miller entitled Telephone Repairman. All morning in the February light, he has been mending cable, splicing the pairs of wires together according to their colors, white blue to white blue, violet slate to violet slate in the warehouse attic by the river. When he is finished, the messages will flow along the line. Thank you for the gift. Please come to the baptism. The bill is now past due. Voices that flicker and gleam back and forth across the tracer-colored wires. We live so much of our lives without telling anyone, going out before dawn, working all day by ourselves, shaking our heads in silence at the news on the radio. He thinks of the many signals flying in the air around him, the syllables fluttering, saying, please love me, from continent to continent, over the curve of the earth. Telephone Repairman by Joseph Miller from his collection Overtime, published by Eastern Washington University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine. committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 40 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to KTMO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are Jeffrey Clow and Matt Lillard here from Eagle Crest, talking about the great amount of snow we've had lately. Thank you for coming down.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
So I bet you're glad to see the snow.
Oh, very glad. We've got a big smile on our face. It's good to see some natural snow at sea level. It's even better to get it up at the mountain, and it's been a tough road to haul this winter, finding snow and finding cold weather.
And you've been making snow.
We have been making some snow. We started making snow as early as we could this year, which was around mid-November, and we were able to open up the Porcupine area on December 6th, and it's been open every day around the weekends and the holiday season ever since. And we can't make a lot of snow at Eagle Crest, but it really does help our operations in that it enables us to, A, open the Porcupine area, and then, B, help out the base of the Ptarmigan area in order to get open sooner.
Tell me about the process of making snow.
Yeah, so basically we pull water out of Cropley Lake, and it's a gravity-fed system, so we can only make snow up to a certain elevation on the mountain. But we've got three snow guns, and in the industry there's a couple different types of snow guns, but we have what are called fan guns. So when you've been up there and you can hear it, it sounds like a big machine with a big fan behind it. And it really shoots out compressed air, water, and blows it out with a fan, and at temperatures less than basically 28 degrees, you throw it up into the air, and by the time it hits the ground, it's snow. It's a very magical process.
That does sound cool.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun to go out there and see it working and see the product when it comes out. Because in a year like this, without snowmaking, without getting on it as early as we could, it would be that we'd be in a different situation than even we are right now.
How much snow can you make?
It really depends on the temperatures and how long we want to make it. Usually, Mother Nature comes in and helps us out, sometime in December. She just didn't want to show up, I guess, until now. So we've been making it as often as we can, where we can for the past month and a half. But usually we end up shutting down the snowmaking, by the holidays because we've got enough natural snow.
How long can you run the machine?
We can run it as long as the cold weather holds out. We've run the three machines for as long as about 6 or 7 days straight. We do run 24 hours when we're making snow. So it can be somewhat draining on the staff we have because we're running, three shifts and 8-hour shifts, or if not more, over the course of a week, week and a half. And just keep going until it warms up again.
What do you do when you're making the snow? Do you just point it in the output chute in the right direction and turn it on?
Well, it's the short answer is yeah, basically like that. But a lot of things play into it. Mainly the wind is your biggest factor. Wind and temperature cause you to constantly making adjustments to the snow guns. And, for instance, this past couple day cold snap, the winds, obviously anybody who was down in Douglas or downtown were feeling the talk of winds coming, and those can affect the way we make snow. And you want to make sure most of it lands on the trail and not in the woods. So it's kind of a game. You get to go up there and figure it out and point them in different directions and see where it all falls.
But you're here with smiles on your face because the snow has finally arrived.
Yeah, exactly. We picked up about 6 to 8 inches on the mountain since yesterday. And there's a little bit of a crust on it now, and it's getting a little bit wet, which is actually a really good thing for us. We don't want light, powdery snow right now because we need a base. The mountain needs some thick, dense snow so skiers can get up and ski on it without hitting the ground. Up till now, we haven't had a whole lot of that. So this type of stuff is really good for us right now. We're going to get out and pack it down where we can tonight and then open up the Black Bear Chair in the upper mountains starting tomorrow at 9 a.m.
How many skiers have passes?
How many skiers have passes? We sell about just under 3,000 seasonal products. So that includes season's passes and multi-visit cards. Passes are around 2,500 people in Juneau. So it's a pretty good chunk of the population commits to a season at Eagle Crest. And it's one of our great strong points. We're really appreciative of all those people that do buy passes every year because it certainly helps us in operating.
And you've got some special events coming up this weekend.
Oh, we do. Well, January is Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month. And this is a national grassroots effort to try and get people outside moving around, learning how to ski and snowboard, or maybe they skied or snowboarded when they were a kid and trying to get them back into the sport. So this weekend we have our women's first tracks program, which is Saturday, January 10th, and that's just for women, first-time or second-time skiers or snowboarders who are like, okay, I want to try this sport. I want to get out there, but I only want to do it with the women. So it's just for women only with women instructors, and you can find more information out on that at skijuno.com. Coming up, we also have, January is a great month to learn how to ski and snowboard. And as Matt said, we've been able to make snow on the Porcupine area pretty much since the beginning of the season, and it's in great shape. And so a lot of people have been talking to me and going, ooh, how can I learn how to ski or snowboard if there's no snow? Well, because we've been able to make snow, the surface is great. It's perfect to learn how to ski and snowboard. So I encourage everybody, if this is your year, if you're thinking about it, and you should be thinking about it, get outside and come on up and learn how to ski and snowboard.
If someone learned how to ski 20, 30 years ago, is the gear that much different than they would need to take lessons?
It is a lot different, Jeff. The new technology, the gear's lighter, it's more flexible, easier to turn. We're skiing on much shorter gear than we have been before. Snowboards are more designed, easily to turn, and the gear that we have in our rental fleet is designed with the first and second time skier snowboarder in mind. So it is a lot easier to turn. So I talked to people who said, well, you know, I skied when I was a kid, or I skied when I was 20 and I just didn't even like it. Well, give it another try, because we really think that you'll like it. And the Porcupine learning area is fabulous. So much different than the days of the old platter pole and being drug up the mountain. So it's a great time to get out there and get outside and get into winter.
And the new chairs, the Black Bear chair is opening up?
The Black Bear chair will be opening up tomorrow morning. So we'll open up the ptarmigan chair at 9 o'clock in order to access the Black Bear chair. We are advising that it is still only advanced and expert skiers and snowboarders only. We haven't had a lot of snow. We still only have 44 inches at the top of the mountain. So it's, you know, use caution. There's marked and unmarked, many more unmarked obstacles than marked obstacles. And come on up and get your ski and snowboard legs back.
Yeah, it's going to be a great time up on Black Bear this next couple of days. And we're really excited to be able to offer that option. Without the Black Bear chair, we certainly wouldn't be opening tomorrow. There's just not enough base steps at the mountain to be running off the ptarmigan chair and running multiple laps. One thing to point out with the opening tomorrow and through the weekend is it's looking, or we're going to open tomorrow with limiting the number of rides people can take on the ptarmigan chairlift. So really the ptarmigan chairlift is there to access the Black Bear chairlift, and we want everybody to be up on Black Bear and using that lift as the way to access all of the terrain. So we're really going to ask people to come up, and even pass holders are going to have to check in at the bottom of ptarmigan and just read a skier agreement that really explains the conditions and what they're going to be encountering up on the mountain and agreeing to it and signing a roster. And then they'll get a lift ticket that we'll punch up to three times for them to ride ptarmigan. But they can ride Black Bear as often as they want all day long. And we're going to pack a couple ways down, or as many as we can. So trail like Willow Awl will have some packed snow on it. It's not going to be what everybody's really accustomed to and the great grooming that we can always have when we have a lot of snow, but it will be something. And then the rest of the east side should be open and should ski quite well. There's a little bit of a crust on the snow, but it should get chewed up pretty quick, and we should have a great couple days.
What about the cross-country skiing?
So we also will be grooming the upper loop for this coming weekend. We're going to open the upper loop as well, and that'll be accessed by going up Sneaky. And we certainly don't have near enough snow at the base to be grooming the lower loop, but the upper loop will be open and have some great skating lanes. And so we're happy to be able to do that as well. So anybody can come on up, both alpine and downhill, and skiing and snowboarding, and enjoy a great weekend at Eagle Crest.
I'm talking with Matt Lillard and Jeff McCloud about Eagle Crest. And my big question is, you work there on the mountain. How often do you get a chance to go out skiing and enjoy the snow?
We try to as much as we can, but I've always was told when I first got into it, and I'll tell anybody else, that if you want to be skiing, don't work in the ski industry. You know, we're really up there, you know, we love working at a ski area because we like bringing skiing and riding to the public and people and letting them enjoy it. We certainly enjoy it ourselves, and it's definitely a perk to be able to get out there when we can. But, you know, if you really wanted to be a ski bum and get out there every day of the season, just buy a pass and go. Don't come work for us. but we have a great time up there. You know, I really love to see people up there enjoying what we have to offer and the product of Eagle Crest, and that's really our reward.
And about how many employees do you have?
In the heart of a season, when we're up and running with all of our programs, we run about 110 employees. Right now, when we've got limited lifts and what have you, and not all of our programs are up and running yet, it's about 50 or 60 on the weekends. And that includes all of our ski patrol and snow sports school staff. And the snow sports school staff is probably the biggest chunk of our employees. And we've got a lot of great programs anywhere from 3 years old on up for skiing and 5 years old for snowboarding now. So it's a great program and a great staff.
Any other events do you want to talk about?
One thing that we do have coming up, if you know of a third or a fourth grader that has never skied before, it is time for the 34th annual Learn to Ski Weekend up at Eagle Crest. And this is sponsored by Mendenhall Auto Subaru. And the applications are in the schools now. And you can also find them online at skijuno.com. And the Learn to Ski Weekend is January 24th and 25th. So 40 lucky third and fourth graders who are picked will get to come up to the mountain, ski both days for free, take lessons. Their rentals is free, their transportation, food. It's just a great time on the mountain. And so, again, if you know of a third or a fourth grader, or if you are a third or fourth grader and you're listening and you've never skied before, you might think about putting an application in for the annual Learn to Ski Weekend at Eagle Crest. And you can check that out at skijuno.com.
A lot of stuff going on. Thank you for coming down and talking about it here.
Thanks for having us this afternoon, Jeff.
This is Bird Note. It's 27 degrees outside, and a robin is rolling and flopping in the bird bath, flinging water every which way. What on earth is it thinking? Isn't it going to freeze to death with all that water on its feathers? Well, it turns out that bathing in winter actually helps birds' feathers protect them from the cold. The bath washes away particles of dirt that might otherwise prevent the feathers from their waterproofing work. And it probably also helps remove parasites. Birds need water in all seasons, for drinking and for bathing. So, when the water in your bird bath is frozen, you can thaw it with hot water, or go the slightly more expensive but easier route by adding a heater. Some things to keep in mind. It'll help to put the bird bath on the south side of the house, or in the spot that gets the most sun, or against a sheltered wall. Place it no more than 6 feet from a tree or shrub so the birds can fly to cover if a predator comes along. If you supply winter birds with water, you'll be doing them a great service. And you might attract some really fascinating customers. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Support for KTOO is provided by Davies Berry Insurance, serving southeastern Alaska since 1917 with personal and commercial insurance, including homeowners, life, and health policies. 789-5900.
53 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Tomorrow night at the Jack, there's going to be a great group, the House Jacks. They're performing at 7:30, a concert brought to you by the Juneau Jazz and Classics folks. If you need tickets, check out their website or go to the Jack, get tickets yourself.
I'm taking chances and maybe
taking a cappella to new heights, that's for sure. Such House Jack's there performing at Jack tomorrow night at 7:30, and the concert brought to you by the Juno Jazz and Classics folks.
Support for this program comes from the Native Craft Co-op, located in downtown Juneau in the Senate Building, offering locally made and handmade Native craft, including jewelry, carvings, and more. More information at facebook.com/nativecraftcoop.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD, and it's easy to share a little of your PFD in Southeast communities through Pick, Click, Give. There are over 36 causes based in the Juneau-Douglas area alone, including KTOO Public Radio. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
Tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, Shona Osterholt will host. Beth Weigel will be here to give us an update on activities at the library. We'll talk with the director of Perseverance Theater's new production, The Mountaintop. House Jacks will be here to give us a preview of their concert tomorrow night at the Jack. And Nancy DeTourney will be here with Arts Up. That writer's almanac, Verno, and Music and More tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, cloudy skies, rain diminishing through the evening. Chance of light, freezing drizzle. Low temperatures 23 to 31 degrees with light winds. Forecast for Thursday, patchy fog in the morning, mostly cloudy skies in the afternoon with high temperatures 28 to 34 degrees. Partly cloudy skies expected on Thursday, and Friday with a slight chance of rain predicted for Friday.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K2.